Welcome into the Trailblazers.com podcast for Thursday, June 18th. I'm Gavin Dawson from 95.5 The Game, joined in studio by Casey Holdall, Trailblazers.com. How's it going, Case?
I'm doing well, Gavin. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Draft's a week away. Dave from BlazersEdge.com is on the phone with us, as always. Dave, what's up, my man?
Well, I'm having to make a tough decision about whether to simply release Ben Golliver in order to take the cap space, or whether we want to extend him on his rookie contract here. And I don't know. I got to make a decision soon.
Has he been with the BE team for a year now?
Yeah, well over.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
If nothing else, Dave, you can't.
He's going to become a restricted free agent here pretty soon, so I got to get him signed up. Otherwise, someone else might steal him. I don't know. Casey's had his eye on him, I know.
Yeah, you can't lose him for nothing, Dave. I mean, you know, if he's going to go, he's going to go. But you should at least try to get something out of it, you know. So.
Well, yeah,
maximize your assets.
Maybe I can get an autographed picture of Blazer Dancer or something. I don't know. We'll work that out.
Yeah. Do you have Donald Sterling money or Paul Allen money?
We're rolling in the Paul Allen money, baby. But
I love it. So yeah. Lots of stuff to talk about, obviously, with the draft a week away. Now, next Thursday is going to be draft day. So first item of business, I think, is the three of us deciding what the podcast get is for next week. You want to go Wednesday?
I think we can go Wednesday.
Wednesday should be the best opportunity for me. How about you, Dave?
That sounds fantastic.
All right, good stuff. So the podcast will be next Wednesday. Workouts yesterday, the town had Hansbro Mania for a day. I mean, he's been a polarizing college basketball figure, two-time player of the year, 20-8 averages. A lot of people say that the most unstoppable post-scoring presence in college hoops. Now, you obviously got to qualify that by saying there's not too many post players that spend many years in college anymore. So if you stay for 4 years and you have any game, chances are you're going to be at or near the top of that list. But anyway, your thoughts on Tyler Hansbro? Could it fit in Portland? Would it work in Portland? Worth the 24th overall pick if he slips there? Go ahead.
I think watching the workout yesterday looked good. Obviously, you know, an accomplished college player. And I think that, you know, he brings some things to the Trailblazers that they could use, basically as a backup power forward, some rebounding, some toughness. It'd be interesting to see how his game translates to the NBA. It seems like, you know, during the college season, he was considered, you know, basically a second-round pick, and then he measures out to 6'9", 6'10", with shoes, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's a first-round pick again. So, you know, it's kind of speaks to the foolishness of the whole process, but as far as how he fits with the Blazers, I mean, Kevin Pritchard said that, you know, he fits with the team, but at this point, I don't think he is available at 24. I think that he gets picked up before that, but I don't really think he's the kind of guy you try to move up to get. I mean, if he's there, great. If he's not there, I don't think you make a play to get him unless, I mean, you throw in 2 second-round picks and your pick and it gets you up a couple spots. If that's the case, then great. If not, don't sweat it.
I think just basketball-wise, he'd feel like the Shavlik Randolph role. I mean, probably next year, being a rookie, not being a strong defensive presence, you know, who really couldn't use a 6'8" or 6'9" guy that has a knack for scoring around the basket and plays balls to the wall 24/7, you know? But I agree with you totally. How about you, Dave?
You guys pretty much took it. He's not going to be available at 24, probably. What do you have to trade to get up where he is available? I mean, it's only 7 or 8 spots, but then you got to look, what player are you giving up in order to get him, and are you getting commensurate value? And somehow I just kind of doubt it for that position. I mean, come on, you don't draft a backup power forward. You draft a starting power forward who is good enough to end up as your backup. Now, you know, love the guy's hustle, love the guy's attitude. I think everybody does. But it just doesn't seem like the stars are going to align to make this happen.
I think backup power forwards are kind of draftable, but they need to be a perfect fit. And, a guy like Mark Bryant, if he was coming out of Seton Hall in 2009, that would make sense. But a guy who got it done offensively but has defensive limitations pretty much would solve nothing, right? I would rather keep Channing Frye at backup 4 than bring in Tyler Hansbro.
Sure, and the Blazers didn't draft Mark Bryant to be a backup either. He started his first game. Unless you're in the second round, I think, you just don't anticipate, or you don't go for a guy saying, this guy is scheduled to be our backup. Now, you may think in the back of your mind, yeah, that's probably where he's going to end up. But you want to go draft a guy that you think might be a starter if he pans out. And if he doesn't, you know, no big deal. but you don't go for the safe guy here, I don't think.
Like I've said all along, yeah, I don't think the Blazers at 24, if they use that pick, I don't think that they take a chance on someone, you know. And I think Tyler Hansborough is the kind of guy where, you know, you're not really taking a chance. What they said numerous times during the workout yesterday is with Hansborough, you always know what you're going to get. And that's kind of the, while in some respects that's, it's comforting and secure, but that's not, you know, I don't really think that's the Trailblazers draft philosophy. They like to go out and, you know, take a few chances, especially that late in the draft where, one, you're not paying the guy a whole lot of money, and two, you know, maybe you find something that someone else didn't see. And I think with Hansborough, he's been scouted to death. Obviously, everyone knows who he is, and you know, there's just not that mystery there that I think the Trailblazers like out of picks late in the round.
Let's move
sure,
on.
Sure, he's the Denny's of the draft. I mean, you know exactly what you can get. It's good. You can go there at 3 a.m., but come on, it's Denny's. So, I mean, you take a chance on that new restaurant down the street, go have some Thai or Ethiopian or something and see if it works out. Maybe it bombs, but maybe you found your place to go.
How about some Bruin? How about some UCLA Bear, you know? How about Darren Collison, a guy that has been disappointing at UCLA, and he might kind of feel safe, but I tell you what, I think there's an upside to UCLA players because of the style that Ben Howland plays. It's so slow down, it's so disciplined on offense, it's defense, no turnovers, quality shot, rebound, outlet pass. You know, it's boring basketball. Let me see, you got Ryan Hollins, who's come on, you have Kevin Love, who's probably exceeded expectations in his freshman year. Jordan Farmar was kind of like so-so, and I'm really unimpressed with where he's come so far in his NBA game. But, you know, coming into college, Darren Collison was really the talk of incoming freshmen at the point guard position. Hasn't really flourished at UCLA, but hell, you know, look at what Russell Westbrook did. He looked like just a versatile, good combo guard. He started getting into draft workouts, and obviously his athleticism got there into the top five. What do you think, you know, after Collison, you know, another guy that could be available in that same sort of range case?
Yeah, I like Darren Collison. I think, you know, if they decide that a point guard is something that they need at this point, I think that Collison, if he's available, is a good option. Chad Buchanan mentioned yesterday kind of what you were saying, that, you know, he's faster than you probably got to see at UCLA North-South because, you know, they don't play that style of ball, which in some respects is good for Portland because, you know, we don't really play that style of basketball either. So I think, you know, he's a little undersized probably, but a nice player, quick. He's another guy too where, you know, he might not ever be a superstar in this league, but he'll probably be a really nice, you know, maybe borderline starting power, or not power forward, but point guard in this league. And a real good kid, nice defensively, or at least he's better than average defensively, I would say, for a 6'1" point guard coming out of college. He's not a stopper by stretching the imagination right now, but I mean, he's a guy who is probably going to be able to play for you. Now, is he going to be able to beat out a guy like Jared Bayless? I don't know.
Yeah, they don't really need anything. So, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to what you just alluded to is, what is this guy's ceiling, and are we going to invest resources developing a young player when we have a team that's ready to compete and go into the finals? How much resources do we want to spend on a guy that is going to become a solid NBA player? You know, it's one thing to take Batum and be like, oh, he's 19. We're going to invest a lot of time and resources into him, and we feel like we're going to have a dynamic weapon. But I don't get the feeling from what you said that you think Darren Collison's going to be that guy, right? How about you, Dave? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's if you're going to go point guard, you got to go all out, I think. I don't think you bring in another so-so point guard. I like some of the things that Case said about Collison, but the size worries me. The lack of shooting worries me a little bit, especially for the Blazers. You know, I think if you're going to look at point guards, you have to move up for them. You have to look at a guy like Ty Lawson in the middle of the round, or even higher, so that you're sure you can get a player that you're spending your time on wisely. You know, this has been point guard central for the last 5 or 6 years, and we run them through the mill, and we get rid of them, and eventually, I keep saying this, eventually that's going to catch up with you. You can only spend so many first-round picks without getting return on them before, you know, you're behind the rest of the league.
Hmm. Okay, if you're cool on Hansborough and Collison, is there anybody else that's come through that's jumped out to you?
I thought Jeff Pendergraft yesterday looked pretty good, actually. He's a guy, too, that if you could get him in the second round, I think that'd be a real nice pick for, I think, 33 or whatever it is, that our first second round pick. You know, he's a guy who kind of brings the same things Hansborough does. He's obviously not as polished offensively, but I don't know how much you really need offense out of that backup power forward position. I feel like in the second round too is a better, you know, taking a backup in the second round who maybe can flourish into a starter one day would be nice. So if you're not going to go out and get a free agent, or you're not going to make a trade for a backup power forward, then I think a guy like Pendergraft, who, you know, he's got good size, decent defensive player, you know, he can make plays around the basket. He's not going to be able to step out and shoot, but, you know, we already have a power forward that does that people seem to complain about anyways. So, you know, in certain respects, it's probably good that he doesn't have that part of his game. And you know, he looked nice in his workout today or yesterday. He was a real nice kid, super funny, seemed like a great personality. So, you know, I could see them going that route in the second round if he's available. Now, he might be a borderline first rounder, still obviously yet to be seen. But I thought he looked nice in his workout yesterday, and I was impressed. And I've followed him obviously through the Pac-10. You know, someone wrote on a comment someday, it seems like he's been playing since the '80s, which is true. I mean, that guy feels like he's been at Arizona State since, you know, the dawn of time. But nice player. You know, I think there's probably a little interest there. And that's dead air. So that's what I got.
Dave
on
and
that.
I are in a standoff. I really don't have anything to say against Pendergraft. I watched him at Arizona State too. I don't mind him. The one other player that I thought, to my knowledge, hasn't been in for a workout, but I could be mistaken, is DeJuan Blair.
No,
Pitt.
It's not.
And I, you know, they had, I think, three battles, Pitt and UConn, and I was always amazed that, you know, Hashim Thabeet at 7'3" looked like a dominant force, physically imposing against everybody else that he came up against the Big East. But this guy, DeJuan Blair, at 6'7" and 245 pounds with an amazing wingspan, kicked his backside up and down the court, and on both ends of the court was physically overwhelming for a guy 7'3". And I just like what that said about, you know, his muscles and how it all comes together, and how he played really with a tenacious edge that allowed him to overcome a major size differential. And anybody with an amazing weak span like that has an opportunity to be a great rebounder.
Yeah, I think they've got three more workouts planned. I think Friday, then Monday and Tuesday. And I know they're still working on getting guys in. DeJuan Blair is one of those guys where, you know, initially he was a lottery pick, I think. And then, you know, there's some concerns about his knees now, I guess, and he's starting to drop a little bit. I don't know if he drops 24, so I don't know if his agent lets him come out and do a workout, you know, this late in the process. But I'm sure he's a guy, you know, who they would probably like to get in. And, you know, hopefully they will. I think there's a few other guys like that, too. I think Ty Loss is another guy where they're trying to get him in. He's kind of right on that borderline of, you know, will he be available? And not only that, but, you know, when an agent is looking at where he's going to send his players at, he looks at our roster and says, well, you know, okay, so I'm Ty Lawson's agent, and I see you've already got Steve Blake, Sergio Rodriguez, and Jared Bayless on your roster. Where does my guy fit in there? You know, so it's not only a matter of are you in that range, but also does my guy fit in with your roster? And if he doesn't, you know, I don't want to send him out there and have him, you know, risk injury to do a workout where I know he's not going to play.
I think Ty Lawson's like maybe the most prepared point guard to come in. Like, if any other point guard came in, I'd say, okay, you're down at the bottom of the depth chart. But I think Ty might be good enough, strong enough, quick enough to slide ahead of Bayless and Sergio on the depth chart.
I think it's a possibility.
I mean, you saw him in the national championship run. You saw him last year. I remember he came in and worked out, actually. Yeah. He was in there with the Russell Westbrook workout, and I was impressed. Now, he went back to college because he wasn't guaranteed a lottery spot. Is he still in that borderline, you know, mid-teens to early 20s area?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of boards have him as, like, you know, the fifth or sixth best point guard in the draft. So, I mean, you look at that, and that puts you somewhere in the late teens to early 20s. I mean, maybe there's a team that likes him more than they're letting on, but I think you look at all the point guards in this draft, and he's, you know, he's a little ways down there as far as you know, potential goes. I think that he's maybe the most NBA ready, quote unquote, but I think a lot of times, you know, teams are looking for the home run, and I don't know if Ty Lawson is the home run when you're looking at other guys like Jrue Holiday or Brandon Jennings or, you know, some of those guys who have a little more name cachet.
Now, B. Jennings is an interesting player to me, Dave. I saw him play here at the Les Schwab Invitational when he was with Oak Hill. Didn't see much from him in Europe, but he's a bigger style point guard that I think is going to be a very good defender, sees the floor well, can score inside and out, create off the bounce. Not sure if he's going to be available, but I'd be real interested to see if the Blazers would be interested in moving up to get a player like that who body-wise and ability-wise, I mean, you talk about a guy that can do many different things out on the court, the versatility, I know, and the length. The Blazers would have to be interested in a player like that coming out, right? I mean, I think out of all the upside, Brandon Jennings has an O.J. Mayo type of backcourt game that I would love to see alongside B-Roy.
Yeah, he's kind of a wild card, which, you know, we've been talking about maybe you want to do that. But the problem I see with him is that he's a wild card who likes to handle the ball a lot. And, you know, really, I think you want a little bit more of a pure point guard, if at least that's what excites me, if you're going for someone to play alongside Brandon Roy, someone who's unselfish, someone who can make a play. And I don't know that Jennings is that guy. I guess I kind of reverse my field a little bit when we're thinking about point guards. If we're thinking about any other position, I say go for broke. Get the guy you're going to take a chance on who might be spectacular. With point guard, I just want a guy who can play. And, you know, a guy like Lawson, I think, makes better sense in many ways because, like you said, he's ready to play. He's got the skills and he's got the mentality to play alongside of Brandon Roy versus Jennings, who, you know, kind of is in the Bayless-esque position where he's got a lot of skills, but he's going to have to hold that ball for a long time in order to demonstrate them, and we've already got that.
The excitement of draft day one week from today is it's going to be amazing because nothing could happen, but at the same time, a lot of stuff could happen. Kevin Pritchard was on Courtside Monday, and he was asked, is it possible that you just completely get out of the draft? You're looking for veterans. You don't take anybody at 24. You move that pick. You move all four of your second rounders. He said, yeah, I guess it's possible, but what's the fun in that?
Yeah, yeah, he said that yesterday too, and I think we'll end up with one player out of this draft. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a second round pick and not, you know, that first rounder. But I think, I mean, they're not just gonna trade away those picks, and even if they do trade away those picks, they're trading away those picks with players too. So if nothing else, that's exciting too. Whenever you have, you know, some of the players that have been, I mean, because I mean, when you look at this roster, most of the guys that are on this team right now have been with the team for a while, and when you start talking about trading away those players, you know, obviously there's a lot of interest there because people know these guys and they're familiar with their games, and you know, you always have people who are for it and against it, and I think that's where the interest is going to come out of this draft. I don't think it's going to be from whoever we pick. I mean, you know, people will always have some kind of passing interest in that, but a second round guy, you know, with a non-guaranteed contract is, you know, he's a second round guy. What people are going to be interested in are all the moves that happen during the draft that maybe can't even get talked about until, you know, July 10th, or, you know, on the off chance that we actually do make some moves that you can talk about that night. I think that's where the interest is going to be at. And I think that is fun. And I think Kevin Pritchard knows that's fun. And I think KP is probably having a little fun with all of us at this point when it comes to talking about what they're going to do in the draft.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You can have fun without a guaranteed contract. It's kind of like going out to the club and, you know, hooking up. Versus thinking about getting married. We need to play the field a little bit, Kevin. We need to go out and dabble with some of those second-round picks. I don't think we trade away all of them, but it wouldn't hurt my feelings at all to trade away number 24, save some cap space, and just you know, flirt a little bit with those four second-rounders or however many we have, and see if any of those players will pan out.
Here's my bold prediction for the draft being a week away. I just feel like they are going to get a player they really like with a lot of talent, and they will be picking in the NBA draft lottery. Do you have a bold prediction for the draft as it sits 1 week away, Dave?
I think the more we've already brought him up, but the more I see of Lawson, the more this guy kind of makes the back of my neck tickle. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody about it, but I'll make my call now. And I've been pretty good the last few years. As far as I can tell right now, I'm going to say, okay, Blazers, go ahead and get that UNC point guard and see if he can crack the rotation, probably trading away Sergio, if not in the process, you know, sometime soon, and let Lawson take the third point guard
I think that trade exception is going to come into play, or is it? I mean, set me straight if it's not. But on draft night, the Blazers could move a trade exception for a draft pick, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, that is true.
So that's going to be the interesting thing to me. Just because you're not in the lottery, or just because you're not at the lottery, doesn't mean you won't be in the lottery. Another Kevin Pritchard little tidbit heading into this draft. Okay, moving on from draft stuff, if you guys are cool.
Yeah, let's do it.
Wait. Did we get Casey's? Casey,
My prediction is that we don't. We don't pick in the first round, or we take a pick and we trade it to someone else in exchange for maybe nothing, maybe just space. I don't know. I just don't see us using that 24th pick for our own.
Let's move on to Brandon Roy, who had a story. Was that Oregon Live earlier this week? He has taken a month off from basketball entirely. Wow, that must be tough at age 24 with that athleticism to just take a month off of basketball, you know.
I believe I wrote that, actually.
Okay, that was you.
Yeah.
That's right, you had an interview with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, trailblazers.com, the center court blog, Casey Holdall. I read so much stuff.
I know, it's hard to keep track, I know it.
So I read from some SOB earlier this week that Brandon Roy's taking a month off. That's funny, dude, my bad. Anyway, he's going to take another month off?
Well, this was about 3 weeks ago. So he said he was going to start playing in mid-July was when he was going to head back to the court. So I guess about another month. Off. I mean, he said he was going to start riding the bike, lifting weights, but nothing on court really until middle of July, earliest.
Now, how does this make you feel about his potential involvement in USA basketball? I know I would, as an owner, I would never say, dude, you can't play. Okay, I'm paying you $12 million a year. You better not play. But if you're being selfish as a fan or a team owner, and you see Brandon Roy is taking a couple of months off and getting away from the game, and it seems like every story that's written about the longevity of his career has some mention of a talus bone or arthroscopic knee surgery. I'm sorry, but as a pure Blazer maniac, I just don't want to see him. You know, I do not want to see Brandon Roy ever in the red, white, and blue. I know for him it would be an incredible honor and almost impossible to turn down, though.
I am almost positive he is not going to play in that minicamp in the end of July. I'm about 99% sure that's not going to happen. So, that doesn't preclude him from ever being a part of Team USA. But that camp is for I can't actually figure out what that camp is for. It's either for people being a part of the USA Select Team, which is the team that plays against Team USA. I don't believe it's actually a tryout for Team USA. Even though there might be some players who aren't going to play in the World Championships in 2010, but I don't think it's necessarily a tryout at this point. And that's the thing too. I don't know if Brandon's a guy who needs a tryout. If they want him to play, he'll play. And if he wants to play, he'll play. I don't think you need to throw him out there against Joe Johnson and Mike Bibby and evaluate him and say, well, we're going to take this guy or we're not. I think he's gotten to the point in his career where. I mean, you know what you're going to get from Brandon Roy, and if you want him playing for Team USA, then you ask him, and he either says yes or no. I'll try him out.
There's only a handful of players in the NBA that are more suited and more transitionable from NBA, more pick-and-roll one-on-one to international play. I mean, his game's just tailor-made for an easy adjustment, and for that matter, you've got to imagine that Colangelo and USA Basketball would love to have him.
You would think so, and yeah, I mean, I agree. He's a guy who can handle some point guard duties if need be. He can run pick and roll. He can get his own shot. His J is obviously much improved every single season, and that's super important in international play. I think Brandon would be a great fit if they wanted to go that direction, and I think he'd be even a better fit if a few of the guys who played on the Redeem team decided that they were gonna bow out at this point. Maybe guys like Kobe and. I don't think maybe Dwayne Wade, I don't know. But thing is, too, if Brandon's going to do it, you would like to actually see him get some playing time, too. I don't want to see him over there putting in all that work and then parked on the bench for the whole tournament. So, but, these are things that are, they're a little ways off at this point. I don't know if we need to be too concerned about Brandon Roy's health at this point playing for Team USA since he hasn't done it yet.
Well, the question is he going to be a player or isn't he? I mean, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. But if you're going to be an NBA player and you're going to be a great NBA player, then go ahead and do all the things that great NBA players do and don't worry about it. Let the chips fall where they may. If we always have to keep looking over our shoulder about Brandon's health, that's kind of indicative that he's not going to be long in this league anyway. So, my bias is just to assume that everything's going to be fine, that he's good to go for the rest of his career here. I might prefer somewhat that he saved the national and international accolades until after the Blazers have won a championship, and he's done his work there. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, if they want him young, hey, go ahead, go for it.
Mm. Okay, so that's Brandon Roy. The Freeland-Kopenin thing is next up. Mike Rice, in character as Merlin, which is fantastic, good stuff. Predicting, looking into his crystal ball. Dave, probably lean on you here for some salary cap stuff, but renouncing the rights to Joel Freeland and Petteri Kopenin was his prediction, right? And then didn't Kevin Pritchard yesterday say, no, we won't do that?
Yeah, I was just looking on Brian Hendrickson's blog, and he says, yes, we're not going to do that. Mm. So
if they did decide to do that, let's say KP is posturing and it is in a must-deceive situation at this point, and they do, would that give them more relief, and how much, if so, Dave?
About $1.6 million. Which, depending on the situation, could be critical, especially if you're talking about trading for a higher salary guy. That's the scenario in which I would see that happen. If you're trying to fit either one big player or a couple of hefty salary players under the cap, and you need that last 1.6, and, you know, you're talking about, like we talked about last week, you know, like a Tayshaun Prince or something like that. Oh, sure, I mean, that's no... Kopenin and Freeland for Prince, you would throw in anyway. So, but if you're just talking about regular everyday moves or needing a Kirk Heinrich or something like that, you don't need to do that, and they probably won't.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, those are two guys that got taken in the first round. It doesn't seem like it's really the Trailblazers' MO to just cut bait on guys. You know, usually they get something out of those moves, and I mean they made those deals for a reason, and they obviously saw something in those players that they liked. And you know, I don't know that, unless it's a move where you really, where it's an absolute necessity, like Dave said, I just don't see them just getting rid of those guys just to save, you know, $1.7 or $1.2 million. Now if that's the only way you get a deal to work, I guess maybe you consider it, but I mean, those players have to have some value in the NBA, you know? I mean, maybe, you know, maybe another team sees something there and they can leave him over in Europe for a while and they get better, especially a guy like Petteri. I mean, the guy's, what, like 20 years old? And, I mean, he's 6'5", and, you know, he's working on his game, and, you know, he could be a nice piece for a team someday. So just to cut bait on those guys just doesn't seem like Kevin Pritchard's MO. He always seems to get something out of those moves.
Well, you'll never know it until right when it happens, of course. And, you know, he'd never say it beforehand because that would certainly telegraph that something was going on. So I think it's possible. I actually don't think either player has incredible value in the league right now or for trade. I don't think we could offer them for hardly anything that really mattered. You know, it's possible that right at the moment we hear, you know, Travis Outlaw was traded for player X, and as part of this deal, the Blazers release Kopenin and Freeland.
I love it. Sounds good to me. Let's get it done. I mean, you get rid of Outlaw for player X? I don't even need to know who player X is.
Weapon X? Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I appreciate what Travis Outlaw does for the team.
Yeah, well, have we got any news vibes or anything as far as the players who might be more available? I mean, we keep mentioning Outlaw, we keep mentioning Blake because they have expiring contracts. Anyone else on that list that, you know, you'd say would be, you know, available or most likely to be traded?
How about overpaying for Trevor Ariza? I mean, maybe the Lakers are backed into a corner, man. They $72 million on the books for next year already because Adam Morrison's at $5 million and Luke Walton's locked up for years at $5 million per season. So they're at 72 now. They need to re-sign Odom and Ariza. They're going to go into the luxury tax probably over by about 17 to 18 mil. They're going to be right around 90 mil just to bring back Odom and Ariza. So maybe if you can make it expensive enough for them to consider bringing Ariza and Odom back, you could have them kick down Ariza. I mean, three-point shooter, defender, toughness, rebounds well for his position, smart guy. Is that a player you'd be interested in addressing the Blazers' small forward spot at all?
I would say no. I mean, I like Trevor Ariza, but I don't think he offers you a whole lot more than Nicholas Batum offers you in 2 years or even in 1 year, you know. Same with Martell Webster. I mean, I think, you know, I think Ariza's a better defender than Martell at this point. But I mean, I don't think you stretched yourself to get a guy like Trevor Ariza. I don't see him having that kind of value.
Yeah, you're buying high on him now. When you wanted him was a couple years ago, when you could have had him for almost nothing. At the beginning of his career, he was really valued, and then he went through a dip there for a while, and now his contract's up, and he's looking to cash in. You kind of don't want to be the team that gives him that cash.
Mm. How about Martell Webster, the story? I'm going to try it once again. I believe I read it in the Oregonian.
I believe you are correct this time, yeah.
Nice. Does it concern you at all that he's not clear to go? I mean, the guy was trying to get back in March. The guy was trying to get back in April and May, and hopefully back for the playoffs. Negatory on all of those, and still not clear to play. He's doing a lot of walking, some drills, some jump shooting. I know they're being extra cautious with it. Is that what it is, or should the team be concerned about Martell Webster's long-term health?
Well, I don't think you get concerned about it right now since it's the offseason. I think if you roll out a training camp and he's still not clear to play, then yeah, you really start getting worried. But I mean, cutting him doesn't do any good. But yeah, I know Martell's working hard in the rehab, and I hope at this point it's just a case of them being just overly cautious with it at this point. I know that they want to have him ready to go, and you know, why risk having him, you know, shooting jumpers and dunking and doing full workout if there's even a possibility that he might re-aggravate the injury in the offseason. So I hope at this point it's more a function of just being cautious and not a really serious problem in that foot, because if it is, you know, that's really disappointing for Martell and for the team.
Yeah, you never ever want to hear, well, the guy is walking now. That's just not in the lexicon of top 10 NBA phrases.
The guy is walking now. Yeah. I mean, you talk about a guy that was projected to have a breakout year, and it really excited me. I guess that was at the tail end of the 2007-2008 season, when there'd be a lot of activity on one side, and then all of a sudden you'd see a Martell Webster streaking. A lot of times, he was a guy that could ignite the fast break a little bit and catch and jam and then turn and, you know, try to raise the roof with the crowd or give a fist pump or a come on, let's go. I remember I was sitting second row at the free throw line the Christmas game, right? One of the last times the Blazers played the Sonics at the RG. Might have been the dead last time, but anyway, there was a play, and he made a great hustle play on the sidelines, and he comes running over and looks at everybody and the fans and starts clapping his hands and says, yeah, let's go. And, you know, there was really a youthful exuberance and enthusiasm that Martell Webster brought. And at times he could be clowning, right? At times it was like, Martell, quit joking around. You're down 12 into the fourth quarter, and you're playing like air turntables in the huddle. Knock it off, bro. You know, he's kind of a goofball at times. But I missed that last year, to be honest with you. And maybe the team could use a little bit of spice in their life. And besides the 6 3-point quarter, what was that, the second quarter? In one of those games where he scored like 24 points. Explosive guy. And, you know, you talk about this logjam that's happening at small forward. I know you went to it in depth at BlazersEdge.com earlier in the week. And as much as I go around it, you know, really it comes down to the idea, who's the odd man out between Batum, Webster, and Outlaw? And I would hate to see Martell Webster go. I still think he has a potential to be a Steve Smith, Glenn Rice sort of attacking weapon in this league.
Yeah, I think Martell, as long as he's healthy, can bring something different to the Blazers. He brings a scoring reliability, I think, that Travis doesn't have. Travis may be more prolific, but you just kind of trust Martell a little bit more. Every shot that leaves his hand looks great. When he started throwing down those dunks, as you mentioned, his game really turned. He showed some aggressiveness on both ends of the court that we've been hoping to see for years. The guy is in a tough position because, you know, he was the, number six pick in the draft. He was traded, his original pick was traded for Deron Williams. It's hard to overcome that. I mean, I think he's been living in that shadow now for years. He may never justify that high lottery pick or that trade, but I think he can be a very valuable piece in his own right and someone that the Blazers or any team is happy to have.
Yeah, I mean, Martell, this team is better with Martell Webster. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so if you know, not having that available is a tough pill to swallow. And I think, you know, at this point, you don't consider trading him, one, because it's hard to trade a guy who's coming off an injury, and two, I mean, you re-signed him for a reason, and you got him for a pretty decent price. And, you know, the team obviously has a lot invested in him. They've stuck around with Martell, and they've stayed with Martell when, you know, people were bagging on the team for not taking Chris Paul or whoever else. And, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of skills that this team needs. I mean, he, like that video that Ben had on Blazers Edge the other day, he was making it rain from, you know, from 25 feet out, you know, and he's on a bum foot. So, I mean,
4 years, $16 million, that is a good bargain. You think if they could go back and not do that deal, I mean, at the time it made a lot of sense. He'd just been injured. He was coming back in like December, and I even talked to Kevin Pritchard about it once on the Morning Sports page and said, you know, was it part of the equation to sort of ease his mind about the sense of urgency of coming back in a contract year? And he's like, yeah, you know, that was a little bit of it too. But if you could go back and do or not do that deal, Martell Webster, you could have him off your books, free agent right now, or with this lingering foot issue, you got him locked down 4 years, $16 million. Dave, you're on the hot seat. Go.
Right now, I still do it. I mean, I may change my tune in a year, but the enduring image for me, or the dream for me, is watching Martell over there in the Nick Batum spot with those open threes that Batum got all year and didn't quite hit. And I love Nick. I'm as high on him as anybody, but offensively, watching Martell over there with nobody on him at the three-point line, you're talking about adding, you know, 6, 7, 8 points a game possibly to the Blazers' offense.
You know, he's so good at walking these days. Maybe he could just walk down on defense and just be a scarecrow and then walk down on offense. And the pace the Blazers are playing at, he could probably just walk down into that corner, couldn't he?
A.K.A. the Zach Randolph position, although he wasn't in the corner. But, yeah, we saw a few years of that earlier. We didn't like it too much.
Or he could just jump on Odin's back on the transition, you know, and just get dropped off in the corner. And
there you go.
That way, too.
I like that as well. Go with the buddy system.
Exactly.
So did most people at Blazers Edge, your contributors and your, you know, regulars and whatnot, did they mostly agree that Outlaw would be the odd man out if you had to trade one or just flat out bench one of these three guys? Or, you know, the other interesting idea would be to bench Batum and have him grow up with, you know, 6 to 10 spot minutes per game at the small forward, try to, you know, vacillate between Outlaw at small forward and try to get him some situational minutes at power forward, but then you got this defensive beefy guy coming in and get him minutes at small forward as well. But, you know, to me, that's experiment that's been failed, and you're still trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. So for that reason, I would probably trade Outlaw and continue to grow Batum because of the vast improvement that he showed last year in his rookie year. You got to be tempted at what he could do in 2 years in the league and how good he could be by 2010, 2011. I don't want to stunt that growth. So what was it on Blazers Edge, Dave? Did most people say trade Trav?
People are really all over the map on this. There's a fair amount of sentiment to trade nobody, which I suppose makes sense if you question Martell's health. If Martell can't go in the fall, then you got to seriously ask, you know, who's backing up Batum there. You know, Martell's going to be hard to trade, and I think he's kind of off people's radar a little bit, so he's not really in that discussion immediately, and wasn't too much. I think people are kind of reluctant to get rid of Batum, which leaves Travis Outlaw as the default, but I think I'd be lying if I had said there was a great groundswell of sentiment that we got to trade Travis or that'll be easy. I just think of the three, he's the one probably most that people perceive as most likely, and so he's the one most discussed.
Yeah, I mean, Travis has also been around the longest too, and you know, I think people feel like, either rightly or wrongly, that Travis is the player that he is now, and that's that. So if you like the kind of player that Travis is, then you know, you probably don't want to see him moved. If you think that's not what you want out of your 3-4, then you know, he probably is the most likely. The thing is too, I mean, you know, You can't develop Nicholas Batum playing 6 minutes a game. You know, I mean, he's got to. If you view Nicholas Batum as your, you know, the small forward of your championship team, he's got to play. I mean, he's got to play, you know, significant minutes. Maybe not starter minutes, but at least what he played last year, which I think was about 13 or 14 minutes a game. You know, he's got to get that. You can't you can't learn sitting on the bench. You know, I mean, you can only go so far, and especially when you've already had that game experience, you can't go back to the bench and think you're going to get better. It doesn't really work that way.
Well, and the thing is, I'm not sure the Blazers are a developmental team anymore who should be playing anyone so they can get better, but Batum brings a defensive wrinkle that those other guys just don't bring and that the Blazers need. I mean, he gets stuck on the best, wing offensive player for the opponent all the time, and the Blazers need that. They can't afford to lose those minutes from Nick, I think, from a team perspective. And this is really the issue, is that if all three of them are healthy, Travis can't get enough minutes behind LaMarcus to really exploit his talents. You got maybe at most 60 minutes available for three guys, none of whom are or are going to end up being 20-minute-a-game type of players. One of these guys, at least, has got to get closer to 30, 28, 29, around in there. There's just not the minutes to keep all three young players like that. Plus, you have none of them are completely reliable yet, so you don't know what you're getting in those 20 minutes night to night from each, and it's going to completely mess with their game and make them less reliable. So you're not maximizing any of your resources there by keeping all three.
Wrapping up here, we're going to steal another piece of content from Blazers Edge, something I love to do on the MSP, by the way. I look at your stories, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to steal that. Talk about
you're welcome to whatever you like.
But I always credit you. I always say I read this on Blazers Edge. You'll be happy to know, Dave. Okay, so it was the Blake Fisher poll question. Would the Lakers have still won the title if it was Steve Blake and not Deep Fish running alongside Kobe? I voted yes. I think at times in a lot of games they would actually been better with Steve Blake because of consistency knocking down the outside shot. Derek Fisher really isn't relied upon to do much of anything beyond defending, which at age 34, his prowess at that is lessened. He's not really able to finish off the dribble anymore. Steve Blake, you know, can't either. But I thought they were very similar players. D-Fish maybe a little bit more compact, a little bit stronger for that reason. Maybe he'd beat some loose balls or some rebounds. But then I think Steve would have the advantage from beyond the arc. So I voted yes. How'd you guys vote in that one?
I voted yes as well. I feel like yeah, I mean, Derek Fisher is a brick house of a man. I mean, he is thick, and, you know, you look at him and you look at Blake, and, you know, you can just see it that Derek Fisher is probably a better defender than, well, not probably, Derek Fisher is a better defender than Steve Blake. But the difference isn't that wide, and I think everything else at this point in their career, you know, aside from having that playoff experience, I think Steve Blake is better than Derek Fisher at most everything aside from the defensive side of the ball and those kind of intangible leadership qualities. So, yeah, I mean, I voted yes as well. I think, you know, Derek Fisher isn't why, you know, the Lakers won the championship this year. I mean,
he's damn near why they lost to Houston.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, people will remember him hitting those big shots, but, you know, the fact of the matter is he had a pretty much a terrible playoff through, you know, the whole postseason. So
28-year-old D-Fish would eat Blake for lunch.
Absolutely.
But not 34-year-old.
Yeah,
how about you,
Fisher's
Dave?
A very nice point.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think an interesting question, too, for me is, would the Lakers have won the championship this year with LeBron James instead of Kobe Bryant?
Hmm.
That, for me, is a harder one.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. I would say yes.
I'm going to say no.
I would say yes.
I'm going to say no.
Why?
Well, you know, obviously the Lakers, you know, roster down are a stronger team, but I just don't. I feel like with the Cavs this year, it was more that, you know, LeBron did what he did, and, you know, which is score a lot and handle the ball a lot, but no one else did anything. And one of the reasons why was because LeBron, you know, every time things started going a little south, you know, he played his own game, and I think it'd be the same thing on the Lakers. I mean, you already see Gasol not getting the ball probably as much as people think he should. You got a guy like Trevor Ariza who's playing well, but I mean, he's not. I mean, I feel like there's some overlap there between Ariza and guys like Varejao. Obviously, he can't shoot as well as Ariza does, but I just don't. I feel like the qualities that Kobe brings at this point, the leadership and the determination to, you know, to win and that know-how of how to get it done in the playoffs. LeBron doesn't have that yet, and I feel like that's kind of what carried the Lakers this year.
See, I think LeBron would have found his players. You know, I think Powell and Lamar would have been a lot more consistent. I just think LeBron doesn't thirst to score. He doesn't crave the spotlight from a scoring perspective like Kobe does, and I think he would be more naturally inclined. I don't think you would have seen a Pau Gasol complaining to the media on two different occasions throughout the playoffs. I need the ball. You know, he's basically saying I need the ball, and then it almost killed the Lakers in game two, the game that went to overtime, right? Because down the stretch there, Kobe Bryant was forcing the issue. And we saw the same thing with LeBron turning the corner and forcing the issue into traffic, forced to take kind of like fadeaway runners right into the teeth of, you know, Marcin Gortat and Rashard Lewis and Turkoglu and whoever else they could stack in the paint to try to stop Kobe. Now, it took Kobe a couple of games to figure all that out. LeBron was never able to do that on his team because his teammates were so physically overwhelmed. They were either a lot shorter or a lot slower than everybody else they were matched up with on the Orlando Magic on both ends of the court, where I think what you saw in the finals was a big difference in the supporting cast quality between the Lakers and the Cavs, especially in the department of length and athleticism.
Yeah, you may be swaying me a little bit with that one. I think on paper, I think the Cavs do have a fairly good supporting cast. I think Kobe right now, as much as we rag on him, probably makes his players look a little better than LeBron does. And I think some of that is simply experience and having been through that me phase and now understanding what it takes to win, where LeBron is still kind of going through his. And it's not that LeBron's selfish. I think for a superstar and the banner carrier in this league, he's incredibly unselfish. But I'm not sure that he yet knows how to make everybody subtly look as good as Kobe does. I think a lot of it is what Kobe does on defense. I think a lot of it is the timing. I think a lot of it is how Kobe responds to challenges before they happen instead of after they've happened. So he kind of cuts whatever run or challenge the opponent was going to make off at the pass before it gets ahead of steam. And, you know, the Lakers, for all we say, they have a great roster. And, yeah, I like Gasol. I think Bynum has a lot of potential. But I've never seen the Lakers roster as that dominant. I think Kobe makes it look better than we give him credit for.
Got to tip your hat to Kobe for, you know, getting it done. Tip your cap to Phil Jackson for reinventing, you know, the Lakers as the best team in the NBA again. I don't know how they'd match up against other champions, but fantastic job from Kobe Bryant to get the finals done. So yesterday at their parade, Michael Thompson was saying three more to best the Celtics. You know, that would put them at 18 championships. Boston currently at 17 with LA at 15. Kobe's going to most likely opt out of 2 years and $50 million and sign 5 years, $135 million. How many more rings do you think he gets? I'm going to go on record as saying I think Kobe gets one more. He ties Magic Johnson with five. He's one short of Michael Jordan. I think there's too many X factors. You have, you know, LeBron and Dwight Howard and Kevin Garnett in the East next year. That's going to be formidable. Whoever is at the top of their game in June, if the Lakers get back, is going to have to contend with, you know, a full complement of Eastern Conference firepower, not to mention the improvements the Cavs are going to make. And the Orlando Magic yesterday saying they will go over the luxury tax to re-sign Hedo Turkoglu. So you're going to be facing a full complement of badass teams coming out of the East that could mess with LA, not to mention what could happen with Denver. San Antonio could get healthy, could get an infusion of talent, and Portland's going to make a jump at some point. I just think there's going to be way too many things in the Lakers' path over the next 5 years. I still think they'll get one more, maybe not two, and three is really, really a reach. And the other thing to consider is Andrew Bynum's health, and Kobe Bryant, you know, still has not suffered a significant injury in his career, and that could happen. Obviously, you don't root for injuries, but it could.
Yeah, first off, I'd like to say that I called the Hedo Turkoglu Orlando going into luxury tax to resign him, so I want to pat myself on the back for that.
Nice job.
Two, I don't think Kobe gets another ring as a L.A. Laker. Maybe he gets it somewhere else, but I don't think that team is all that strong. I think they kept talking about it being a young team, but the talent on that team isn't incredibly young. I mean, they have young guys,
yeah.
but I don't think their best players aren't really young players at this point. Though, I mean, Gasol isn't really that old, and Kobe really, when you look at it, isn't that old, but he's played a lot of games in his career. I don't think they get another one. Not for some time. I don't see it from Bynum. You know, maybe he puts it together, but I don't think he's that difference maker at this point. I think they probably lose one or two guys somewhere along the line here, maybe this offseason. So I'm picking zero. No more.
Yeah, I'll say this about Michael Thompson. I love him. Part of my formation growing up, one of the funniest guys in the media, period. But he'll say whatever is going to get him applause. If the Blazers won him the next one, he'd say 16 more to catch the Celtics. So it's I'm with Casey. I think that they're done. I think if they're going to win another one, it's going to be next year, and then the clock has expired on them.
You also wonder, too, I mean, obviously Kobe wants to win, but now that he got that ring without Shaq, I mean, is that same desire there next year as it was this year? I mean, now that he's proven that he can do it on his own, didn't need, you know, a superstar player next to him. I mean, is that...
A lot's going to change with Kobster because, you know, next year he's not going to have the wear and tear of the Olympics on him. I want to know next year how athletic he's going to look. Because going entire 48-minute games and only seeing one acrobatic play from Kobe in the playoffs, it's pretty much a head-scratcher to me. It's the first time I'd ever witnessed that. How is he going to be next year? Is he going to be more healthy and more fresh because he's not going grinding 365 days a year? Is the rest going to do him well, or is the aging process going to catch up with him? 1,132 games already for the Kobster, and MJ in his entire career only played 1,241. So he is 1 year in a playoffs away from having just as much wear and tear on him as Michael Jordan did for his entire career.
Yeah,
I hate this. I hate that you guys are doing this to me and making me say good things about this guy and this team. But I think Kobe's been through a lot. You had the Colorado incident where his career and reputation basically took a nosedive. He had the Kobe-Shaq wars where he was seen as too spoiled to be able to win. Somehow, quietly, in his own little world, he has not only persevered but really reinvented himself and his game, and now turned it into the symbol of winning that you can't deny, which is a championship trophy. So I wouldn't bet against this guy's determination at all, because I think that he has shown it over the past few years.
Well, you know, that devil, he's got tricks up his sleeve.
He does. He can make you think all kinds of things.
Or a shapeshifter, like an X-Men or something.
There you go.
Okay, so that's about all that I have. Wow, we're coming up on an hour once again. It amazes me in the off season. We're coming here and it's like, scratch our heads. Okay, what are we going to talk about? You got the workouts and the draft, and KP said this, and Brandon and Webster and Which Forward, and there's another podcast. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so what's coming up at trailblazers.com? Stuff that I'll probably give credit to somebody else for next
no
week.
No problem either. I don't do it for the credit. I do it for the love of the game. No, we'll have more draft coverage, obviously. I'm going to be writing a story today about the pre-draft workouts that the team went and saw in New Jersey last weekend. Not a whole lot of new information, but just kind of some philosophy stuff from Chad Buchanan and Kevin Pritchard about, you know, the players they saw there and the differences in those workouts. It was a large workout. I think Buchanan told me that I think four-fifths of the league was there for 3 days worth of workouts. So a few interesting tidbits here and there. Also, just going to put it out there now, on June 27th, I will be leaving for Europe for 10 days to visit Rudy Fernandez, Sergio Rodriguez, and Nicholas Batum. So I will have quite a few stories from Europe on that trip, talking about what those guys are doing in their offseason, kind of their lives, you know,
get
back
drunk
home.
With them. Maybe go to a soccer game.
I might go to a soccer game. Might probably won't drink too awful much. But both Rudy and Sergio have camps going on during
cool.
that time, so I'll be going to those camps. Nicholas will be getting ready to start his he'll be getting ready to start playing for Team France in preparation for the European Championships in Poland this summer. So. Should be a lot of interesting stuff. We're going to do some chats. Like I said, I'll be blogging from there. I'll be writing some longer feature stories about what those guys are doing. So I think it'll be interesting. It's something new we're trying. I don't know that this has really been done before. So hopefully there'll be some stuff there that people will be interested in.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, hope so.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dave. What's coming up at Blazers Edge?
Well, we're going to take a look at what will happen in the draft or could happen if the Blazers move up. We're doing the Blazers Edge 2009 mock draft next week, which is readers take the position of GMs for various teams. And this year, for the first time, we're doing all the communication publicly, transparently, so you get to see those chats going on. in the threads, and we'll on Tuesday have our actual draft, try to put together what we think is going to happen. And I've decided I'm going to offer Ben Golliver a max contract with a team option for the ninth year. So we'll see. I'm confident his production will keep up, and I don't think we could do without him. So, and last but not least, I want to say that I am in it not for the credit either, but for the chicks. So if you've got a hot lead with phone number, just email me at blazersub@yahoo.com.
Nice. Those to Dave.
At 955thegame.com, go to the MSP page. We're giving away tickets to UFC 102 tomorrow at 8:30, okay, Friday at 8:30. You want to call in and play Ground and Pound, you can have a chance to win that. And also, coming up in July, it's Hall of Fame month on the MSP. The Portland Sports Media Hall of Fame. Mm. We're launching it. We're going to create a little microsite. And if you have any ideas, email us msp@955thegame.com as far as people that should be nominated and then eventually enshrined with an induction ceremony on the show. It's going to be fun, I think.
Interesting.
You know, going way back.
Nice.
Neil Buchan. Running and Shots, Michael Thompson and Kermit, of course, Greg Robinson, John Phillips. Those are just some of the names. If you have other ones, Ron Carlson.
You got to get Mike Parker in there. Somewhere.
Oh, yeah, Mike Parker, without a doubt. Ed Whalen.
Whalen.
Probably
nice,
the professor, yeah. Tom Hewitt. He's got to be in there, you know. So it should be fun.
Now, are you guys changing your name? Did I hear that?
Yeah, that is an announcement tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
It's more of expanding on the current name.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know? So I'm pretty excited about
the show or the station.
The show. It's just the show. Yeah. It's okay. So look forward to that tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I still want to tell you guys. I can't wait to close this mic so I can tell Casey because it's something I'm really excited about. Anyway, for Dave at BlazersEdge.com, for Casey at Trailblazers.com, I'm Gavin Dawson from the MSP 95.5 The Game. We'll talk to you next week right here at Trailblazers.com. It will be a Wednesday podcast ahead of Thursday's draft.